Committee on General Government and Transportation and Economic Development. Today is Wednesday, May 18, 2005. We're in hearing room 174. I'm Representative Greg Smith. Today we're going to have a work session on House Bill 5122 relating to state financial administration, particularly the Housing and Community Services Department budget. Good morning. I'm going to turn this over now to Monica Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Just to kind of recap where we have been, the Joint Committee on Transportation and Economic Development took the public testimony and presentation from this agency. We're now going to work session that. But just to recap, you went through a prioritization process. You reviewed the agency's activities. I think there was something along like 53 line items programs. Overall, the Joint Subcommittee prioritized most of those programs as high to medium high priority, generally ranking obviously emergency assistance and homeless assistance as the number one or top five items that this agency does. There were several questions around the numerous small to medium-sized programs that they had. I think there was sufficient testimony from the agency about their ability to leverage those individual dollars and the target populations those programs were reaching. I think the major policy questions as far as funding that you're going to be addressing in this budget is the proposed reductions in the governor's budget to cut the state homeless assistance program and the home ownership assistance program, and we have policy packages to address those. And then there was quite a bit of discussion around the continuation of the HUD contract administration. This is a performance contract that the agency has done. That contract has been extended for another 10 years. Two other issues that didn't receive a great deal of discussion but will impact this agency is the computing and network infrastructure consolidation, what's referred to as CNIC, the consolidation of databases. That will impact this agency. This budget proposal that you'll be discussing this morning does not address that at this time. When we know more of those details, those budget implications will be handled later. Okay. And you also had a public hearing on House Bill 2052, which was the bond cap bill for this agency. Due to the timing and getting that bill out of the Joint Committee, we don't have that before us this morning, but we do expect that that bill will be back in the coming few days or week or so. And since, are we in public hearing or work session? I think he opened a work session. So
we need to wait for a quorum.
But we have the agency director.
Waiting on the bill that you just mentioned, in no way affects our ability to move this one today.
That's correct. That's correct.
So not to bring up your spears and
standards.
Why don't we go into recess here and just you can turn off the machines, Anne-Marie.
Hearing, Representative Smith, you had asked a question of the agency concerning community development block grant. I think that's the only outstanding question this agency had left to answer. There is a memo from the Budget and Management Division before you if you want them to address that. That's your choice.
Just really quick, Satish, would you mind coming up and just sharing the thoughts that are in this memo?
Here. Good morning, Mr. Chair and member of the committee, Satish Upadhyay with the Department of Administrative Services. And during the course of the Ways and Means hearings, Representative Smith, you had asked a question as to what the compelling reasons are why the community development block grant programs are not under one state agency. The community development block grant programs are administered by the Oregon Economic and Community Development, and except for all the programs are under that agency except for one program that relates to housing rehabilitation. And that piece of the program is administered by the Housing and Community Services Department. The reason why these programs are under two agencies are the following. One is the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development allows only one state agency to be the recipient of the community development block grants, and OECDD is that agency. The 1999 legislature directed OECDD and Housing and Community Services Department to work to find the most cost-effective way to provide single-family housing assistance to low-income Oregonians. As a result of that, the housing portion was moved to the Housing and Community Services Department. To summarize, OECDD has the expertise, they are the recipients, and they are the main administrators of the program. And there's only one program that this agency does, that is Housing and Community Services Department, and that is because of a legislative direction.
Are we finding that we now have, and I'm going to make up positions, but please work with me on this. Are we finding that we now have two compliance officers in two different departments, and we have two grant writers and two, secretaries, if you will, in two different departments, where if they're under one, perhaps we could consolidate some of that and streamline it?
Mr. Chair, that question I would have to defer to the agency.
Please come on up.
Are you sure?
Chairman Bob Repine, Director of Oregon Housing Community Services. Currently, the program we administer for CBDG is a very small, $3.5 million, thank you, program that we use for residential remodeling programs through our housing resource centers, just to kind of put the backdrop to that. We have one person that administers that because it does take that type of administration, because we use it with our community partners to make sure there's compliance issues and they're meeting the letter of the law. As to economic community development, since they have, my assumption is, since they have the larger piece of the CBDG funds, community development block grant funds, they probably have at least that or more people who manage, because their programs are generally more infrastructure related, as you would know. So I think one of the reasons they were divided was the housing piece, which has always been a primary piece of CBDG, even when it was administered by economic community development, was not getting the kind of the punch or the play that it should have been bringing. So they brought it to us because they figured we could help amplify the use of those resources and use it as a leveraging approach. So whether or not it was, if our addition of one person enhanced the amount of administrative cost of the program, I can't tell you how they actually administered it originally. My assumption is they probably, however they had it structured before with their residential remodeling program, which it was originally entitled, probably had some, at least one person managing it under that same kind of parameters. So, I don't know what the scale is on the other side, because they have the larger piece of it. But I think the more important piece is the housing piece was segregated because it was getting lost somewhat in its interest and its focus on how it could be best used in the state of Oregon when it was under economic community development.
This is one of those issues, I think, in the interim. This committee's interested in putting together an interim committee that's going to look at economic development as a whole. And I think this is one of those issues that we ought to flag just for discussion. Just really quickly, and then I do want to move on. If you had to pick an SIC code, I'm not even sure what it stands for, a business code.
Standard industrial code.
Okay. To define what your department is, would you say you're an infrastructure development type entity? I'm trying to figure.
I would, Mr. Chairman, committee members, maybe as opposed to being infrastructure finance, I think we're a capacity builder in the broadest sense of the term. Capacity builders for development, capacity developers for community service programs, which we administer also. So I think if you think in the broadest context of finances and support, we're a capacity engine to bring our resources or other identified resources to help advance community development, either in the bricks and sticks part of it or the community capacity building stronger communities.
Let me ask one more, and then I do want to move on. We've got economic and community development. We've got housing and community services. Uh-huh. Community services. Tell me how I should think of one and how I should think of the other. At least tell me how I should think of yours.
Well, we actually wrestled with that when Economic Community Development changed their name. We chose to adopt the community service name back in the 90s when it was amalgamated from Department of Human Services, the community service piece. So we never changed the name. In some regards, you could arguably call us housing community development, because in the broader scale, we do a lot of, again, capacity building and development of communities. So it really depends on how you define development, I guess. Development can be defined in the sense of we build things, or development could be in a capacity building for better, stronger community partners. So I suppose we're a little bit of both, but we stuck with the service name only because we just didn't want to change letterhead.
I want to move on. I would just flag for the committee really quick. We'll take a question here really quick. But just think in terms of community development and services, and perhaps economic development and recruitment, specifically the future.
Well, Mr. Chairman, just as a, if I might, that actually is a very well thought out statement because we get sometimes people going down a very difficult path with us when you talk about when you introduce us as housing, which is, again, in the context of what does it mean to the individual who's asking it. We have everything from people calling about, do you have rent supplements? Do you have, can I get a lead from an apartment that might be available down the street from me? So they think of us in the very broadest context of housing. Developing, being a community development partner is probably more in character of what we do. We are much more than housing today.
Right.
You're correct on the statement.
Well, just I would just ask everyone in the room to just keep that in the back of their mind. And anyone who's listening to keep that on the front of their mind. Representative Crock.
Thank you. Just a quick question. Bob was recently in D.C., met with Secretary of Agriculture Mike Johanns. One of the subjects that came up as part of an NCSL rural development group that I belong to, National Conference of State Legislatures for the record, was that the president has proposed moving CDBG, Community Development Block Grants, from USDA. And does that have any impact, if that happens, does that have any impact on what you do?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Croft, the members, our national organization is obviously somewhat concerned about that move, only because they think it's they believe it's to be somewhat punitive as opposed to actually being rationalized. HUD is actually the minister of CBDG today. I have not been able to make necessarily as strong of a tie with the move making more sense to be moved over to the another commerce section. It's like shuffling deck chairs sometimes. May not gain any better sunshine, but you can say it did something. I don't know. I don't think it's going to have an end product. HUD, unfortunately, has been a high target for Congress for the last few sessions. And I think some of this has been brought upon, some of that high-profile issues that they've had, and people are saying, well, maybe a way to get our attention is to peel off programs and maybe then things will change. I can't say. I think it's more politically driven than business-driven, the division, quite frankly.
Well, Mr. Chair, I would just make a comment, and then we certainly move on. I would agree with that to some extent. I am concerned that the ultimate outcome of that is that it's moved from the organizations that have long history and are most equipped with disseminating those funds. It will be moved out of their hands to an entirely new group of people who don't have that experience, and I'm not sure that's very efficient or a very good idea, but it's just for the record.
Should we flag that as well for future thoughts? Representative Bucking, any thoughts or comments before we move on here?
Nope, let's move on.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen.
Okay, Mr. Chair,
It's
my understanding that you would like to consider moving through work session and move the recommendations in block, so I will read through LFO's recommendations as quickly as possible.
Why don't we do that? And if for some reason either of the two other members have an issue that they want to vote separately on, if they just let us know and we can pull that out.
So I'll be working from the packet that you have before you or that was also delivered to your office yesterday, the House Plan work page. I'm starting on page 5, which is the first program you energy and weatherization. This program unit had 3 policy packages, largely technical in nature. The first just recognizing the Smart Buy initiative through the Department of Administrative Services. Package 104 is recognizing a new cost allocation method that was approved by the feds, so shifting some additional dollars to federal funds and lowering the use of other fund resources in this agency. And then technical adjustments to recognize a lower PERS rate adjustment for this agency. Those are the only changes to energy and weatherization program. On page 7, self-sufficiency and emergency assistance programs.
Mr. Chair, hang on. On page 6, Monica, in looking at legislative actions 0507, you have a net change from the 0305 approved budget. And is the 7 position, 7 FTE, the net change? So am I reading that correctly? Are we adding 7 FTE?
Let me clarify.
Okay.
This report would have you believe that. Yes, Representative Brown.
Okay.
What happened?
Well, now you're really confusing me, so help.
This is the first biennium. This will be the first budget, the 0507 budget, that this agency has multiple program units. Prior to this, they had been budgeted as one lump agency. So the 0305 budget does not have an energy and weatherization program budgeted. We simply did not separate it out prior to the 0507 budget. So there are no new positions in this program. Okay. It's just a budgeting change. So that's what you're going to see in various. So, no, there is not.
Thank you for that clarification. That does help.
All right. I have forgotten you were not part of the joint
committee. That is correct. My apologies. I'll try to keep this to a minimum.
That's all right.
But I was a very curious child, so I asked a lot of questions.
So to page 7, self-sufficiency and emergency assistance programs. Again, the first few packages there are largely technical. The package 070 is recognizing a reduction in revenues from low-income rental housing, so there's a reduction of expenditure authority that corresponds with that revenue. Package 090 was the package that, again, first recognized the Smart Buy initiative that you're going to see in each program unit, but this is also the package where the governor's proposal to reduce $838,000 from the statewide homeless assistance program was proposed. The House Chair's plan restores that funding to the program. You have a table before you, I think, at your place that talks about the number of positions and individuals that will be served. That's in your packet.
Where is it?
At your place. It was not part of the original packet, but it looks like this one. And it talks about statewide homeless assistance program and the restoration is anticipated to serve an additional 9,800 individuals in that program. Package 101 is establishing 11 permanent FTE, an increase in a part-time position, and established to address the HUD contract administration and establishing two positions for the emergency assistance program. As I mentioned earlier in the opening remarks with the HUD contract, this is this package, the 10-year contract that has been extended for them to do the inspection and asset and property management for HUD projects. The recommendation that LFO is making is just to modify the package for revised PERS rates, but approve it otherwise. Package 104 is, again, the realignment of the federal allocation cost plan. Again, just the standard PERS adjustments to that one. Package 801 is LFO's adjustments. It's making the PERS adjustments to the entire base budget for this program, as well as making two technical adjustments to that. When the individual programs were separated from the one agency program area, there were two small adjustments that needed to be made to align these correctly. Sir Pelico is recommending approval of that package. Package 811, Housing Opportunities for Persons with AIDS, was a program that was discussed during the public hearing of the Joint Committee. They were phasing in four positions and 2.5 FTE to administer this program. Since the governor's recommended budget was developed, they decided to consolidate this plan program with Department of Human Services. So we are actually reducing the package by $1.4 million federal funds. Those funds will be moved to DHS. And so the positions are not needed here either. Package 813, as part of the House Chair's plan, there is a...
Monica, just quickly, that program has been in place how long?
Mr. Chair and Representative Krupp,
three years
in different portions. There are three or four components of this particular program. Housing has been the primary recipient of the grant, as well as the DHS receiving a portion of the grant. I think in the last biennium, DHS actually received the grant directly from the feds and then passed the money through to housing where they administered it. Again, in working through it, it was determined that DHS would be better off just handling the entire program and administering it there.
But the program, no matter who handles it, is going to have an increase in FTE. No, it is not.
My understanding, Mr. Chair and Representative Krupp, is that DHS will not receive more positions than what housing was used, but these four will be put into DHS's budget. but they're not going to get more people.
They won't have no right. new FTE net increase.
Right. That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Package 813, again, the 3% general fund reduction in services and supplies as part of the House Chair plan. That's it for self-sufficiency program. For community capacity building, again, the standard three technical packages for the smart buy, the cost allocation to the federals, and then the standard PERS adjustments. So no additional changes to that particular program. Homeowner ownership and rental programs. Package Own, I know, was the package, again, where Smart Buy Initiative was recognized, as well as the governor's proposal to reduce $250,000 from the Home Ownership Assistance Program. The House Chair plan restores that $250,000, so you'll see the general fund is being restored. Why there is also a corresponding $250,000 other fund increase for this particular program, this is one where the agency transfers the general fund to other funds and then spends it as other funds in their program. So that's why, so it's not additional $500,000 to the program, it's just reflecting the transfer of the general fund and converting it to other funds. Package 101, this is establishing an architect position. Again, this position is funded through resources of the HUD contract that we talked about earlier. It also will work on those as well as some of the projects that come in through the consolidated funding cycle. LFO is recommending approval with the PERS adjustment.
And Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Pratt.
And this is a new position?
This position replaces a limited duration that was in place
okay.
in the last budget.
And why the justification for a permanent architect position? Is that not something that can be contracted out? Is there a demonstrable need for an in-house position of this type?
Mr. Chair and Representative Krupp will have the agency talk about it to some degree, but there was discussion, I believe, the agency, this is one of two architects that they have. The HUD contract has been extended for 10 years, so we know that there's a reasonable level of permanency and we have the agency address contract versus in-house.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, to the question of the representative, this is our second architect that we have. Just to give you perspective, we used to contract out about 10 years ago. As you would imagine, the portfolio grows large proportion every year. There's additions of 20 or 30 projects every year. We brought on a second architect when we were starting to get involved with this HUD program, where we have this contract now with HUD that's going to be extended for 10 years, where we actually go out using him in many cases to go out and do an analysis of those projects to try to look at the some of those HUD projects have been in well neglect over years, and HUD has said to us, oh, by the way, when you got this contract, you need to also look at the physical plant to see if you can get it up to improvement, because we never were able to figure out how to do that. So we have this architect working in that capacity amongst and doing plan review also. But our architects currently today, between the two of them, probably have a working file load of about 40 projects. Again, if you can always imagine every project that come in, we have architectural reviews on our consolidated funding cycle that we might have 30 applications that come in that need architectural reviews before as part of the scoring process. So it takes an immense amount of time, and then when they're not doing the consolidated funding cycle work, then they go back to working on evaluating current projects for deficiencies. In many cases, Mr. Chairman and committee members, we could farm this out, and we could also tell our partners they need to do this.
How come you don't, then, Mr. Chair?
Mr. Chairman, I think one of the reasons is that, particularly in the affordable housing component, it is our belief that keeping our costs down for our partners is critical. If we can have a full-time architect working for the greater good of Oregonians, as opposed to saying, well, you go find an architect and figure out those costs. Many times architectural fees run in the tens of thousands of dollars. It could be the difference between whether or not they'd ever even want to stay in affordable housing business, quite frankly. Pardon me?
Yeah,
we are ultimately responsible with the HUD contract. So we think, as opposed to contracting on a case-by-case basis, of which we don't have that same kind of control of standards,
because when we did it before, the person was out of the building. We really didn't have any direct oversight as probably we would want to. So we think we get a better product at the end of the day. We get more customer satisfaction at the end of the day by making a relatively small investment using the federal dollars to augment that salary.
This was an issue we brought up when we were still together as a full committee, and I remember penciling it out, Representative, and I'm not sure, and I'd be more than willing to back off on this position, but I'm not sure you could find an architect who would be willing to do the caseload for the amount you could pay them.
Right.
And the reason for that is, you know, if you take the caseload of 40 plus miscellaneous work and you start doing the math on that, we're really getting one heck of a deal off of having an employee. We're actually probably taking advantage of the employee rather than...
People in the back are shaking their heads.
Yeah. You know, could you think about it? I mean, for an architect to do a plan review, you know, you're looking at minimum $5,000.
Right.
Minimum. Yeah. And you multiply that times 40, you know, you're at $200,000. I'm sure we're not paying this person $200,000.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, just...
benefits.
Also...
People in the back are definitely shaking their heads.
If that's the case, we need to talk.
Mr. Chairman, let me also give you another perspective of this.
Your afternoon's going to be fun.
Where our architects play a truly invaluable service to our partners. You know, we happen to have one behind us from the Jackson County area, Access, behind us, one of our partners who builds housing. We become an area where they can come and bounce off ideas with us before they go down a very tenuous path with an architect who might see the world from a set of rose-colored glasses. And by the time we get to it, we're saying, what was this person thinking of? So we really think we become a very front-loaded value added to our partners. Another good example, just recently, we, the agency, hired an architect to design a building for us, 18-unit building, you know, that we're going to put out for an RFP in Florence. The design costs for this building, just for this one building, 18 units, is just under $200,000 from the architect.
Really quick, I want to move on, but I want to add one point from a person who works with architects and engineers. Traditionally, and I'm not saying that this is the case in this department, but traditionally, one of the major bottlenecks is not having sufficient architects on
like
staff.
Plan check.
And all of a sudden, a project's moving, you get to the plan review, and it's bottlenecks in. And so, you and I were on the same page.
Well, and I appreciate Mr. Chairman and Bob for sharing that with me. I'm not always a believer that contracting out is the most efficient way to do things for reasons like this, but I have to ask the question.
Sure, absolutely fair.
It's part of my role.
Sure. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, continuing on, Package 102 is establishing three permanent positions to support property management and compliance work, an additional 2.5 FTE, and reclassifying one position to address home program and weatherization grants. Again, these are replacing limited duration positions, and the reclassification has been reviewed by Department of Human Services for approval. So LFO is recommending approval with the standard PERS rate adjustment. Package 103 is increasing funding for tax-exempt variable rate demand obligations. Some of you may recall the testimony from the state treasurer's office on that and the use of that instrument in this office. We are recommending a change for working with the agency. They have reforecasted their need of this program, so we are reducing the limitation being authorized for this by $234,000. Package 104, again, is the standard package to recognize the federal allocation model that's in place. LFO is recommending approval with the standard PERS adjustment, as well as making a technical adjustment that the agency requested of reducing funds by almost $86,000. It just was an error in the development of the governor's budget. So it's getting rid of that. Package 801, again, standard PERS adjustments. For the base budget, and is also making the other half of the technical adjustment that we talked about in self-sufficiency of consolidating the general fund into the one program area. I would note here that One position had been phased in for the American Dream Down Payment Initiative. They were phasing in a permanent position. LFO is recommending that position become a limited duration position. Funding with the feds is only approved through 2007, so we can readdress that in 07-09 if the funding is reauthorized. Package 812, again in discussions with the agency, revenues from the Housing Finance Fund are lower for various reasons, refinances, previous takeouts by the legislature, various other actions. So this package is recognizing, again, reducing limitation for revenue that they're just not going to receive, it looks like at this point. So that reduction of $839,000 is made to this program. Moving on to program outreach and accountability, their last program area, package 109, again, the Smart Buy Initiative, recommending approval in this one. Package 101, establishing two permanent information services specialists to support the HUD contract administration. LFO is changing kind of our stance on the permanent versus limited duration stance on these two positions for the other contracts. We're recommending the PERS reduction, but retaining these positions of limited duration. And the reason for that, even though the HUD contract is expected to go for 10 years, as I mentioned earlier, this is one of the CNIC-related agencies. Given the uncertainty of what could be going on with those programs, as well as some of the other projects that they have going on, just take another look at it in 07-09 as to whether they need these positions or something else or not at all. So making those positions as limited duration. Package 104, again, standard cost allocation and PERS adjustments in 801 as well. Package 811, this is the complement package that you saw previous about the housing opportunities with people with AIDS, transferring the program to DHS. There was an adjustment needed in program outreach and accountability as well, so that is reflected here, shifting funds within this program area.
Have you had an opportunity to talk with the LFO member and Representative Richardson on that transfer? Are they... I'm assuming they're aware this transfer is coming as well.
Mr. Chair, the LFO analyst is aware of it. I'm not sure whether that has been communicated to Representative Richardson or not. Department of Human Services, Department of Administrative Services has reviewed it and is bringing it forward for both agencies. We looked at it internally. It seemed to make sense to consolidate those programs over there, and I believe that recommendation would be going forward in the DHS program as well.
You folks are good with that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Should it not happen, Mr. Chair, these folks could be back at e-board, or if we can catch it before end of session. So.
Terrific. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Package 812, again, is the reflects the reduction in revenue expected from the Housing Finance Fund, so there's an additional reduction in this program area as well in 812. And package 813 is the 3% reduction to services and supplies per the House Chair plan. And I think that is the recommendations for 0507.
Thank you very much. Is there anything the department would like to add to or share their comments with based on these recommendations? Speak now, forever hold your peace. Okay, Representative Crum.
Thank you. Because I arrived late, I don't know if you covered this, but do we have vacant positions currently in the agency?
Mr. Chair and Representative Krupp, I believe there are two or three vacant positions. I reviewed that list, questioned the agency on it, and received satisfactory responses on those. For example, there were, I believe, the architect position. They were having difficulty recruiting the limited duration, so I believe that they have done a double fill of that position. So that architect position appeared to be vacant, but they really have an employee working. So there were some different, it appeared vacant, but it wasn't. Another instance, they had some recruitment issue on some of the two accountant positions, I believe it was, 1.5 FTE. They were struggling to get those filled. I believe you've been successful in doing that now, and they're on board and moving. So
How long were they vacant?
I don't have the list with me, Representative Krupp. I was less than a year, I believe, on the accountant positions.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Rick Craker, Chief Financial Officer for the Department, to respond to Representative Krupp's question. question. In terms of the county positions, we were vacant for approximately 8 to 9 months on those. There was some transition that we did make within the division during that time. As Monica indicated, we did have some recruitment problems, but we have successfully got the candidate in place now.
Mr. Chair, if you have two accounting positions that are vacant for 8 or 9 months and you got by, why do you need them at all?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Croft, that's a very good question. And the way that we did get by them was utilizing temporary staffing where we could and to be able to provide assistance to us during that time. It wasn't that we were without any help at all. We utilized the temporary system to be able to get in the support that we need.
Mr. Chair, so the reason those positions were not filled was why?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Croft, during that time, the Financial Management Division was looking at a variety of shifts, some restructures that we were doing within the division. So we wanted to make sure we made a good business decision in how we went through managing our federal grant accounting, which is the area that we were looking at. We wanted to do some analysis of the best way to deliver the services. Again, during that time, we had a variety of temporary services contracts that we utilized to be able to get the reconciliations that are necessary to be done, the reporting that's needed to be done. But since that time, we've been able to establish what we as a division can do in our federal grant area and to utilize those positions appropriately.
Mr. Chair, if I may, so it wasn't to save money because of other, you had to suck up, take out a hide other employee costs that the legislature didn't fund you for. It was strictly because of this BAM issue of restructuring. That's why?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
And final question, Mr. Chairman.
Please.
Did you save any money by using temporary staffers?
Mr. Chairman, I think that in terms of the saving of dollars, I think there was some dollars that were reflected in our savings, which we passed on to through the Department of Administrative Services allotment planning process that they use for administrative savings. I think there was a small portion of dollars that we did save during that time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Were
either of those tents hired as permanent?
Mr. Chairman, no, they were not.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, representative, I thought I'd just take another more of a management shot at what Mr. Krieger attempted here. When we have positions, since last session in particular, there was a strong emphasis on the necessity of positions, and DAS was very clear and concise in saying when you do have positions that open that are maybe more middle management or upper, take a real serious look at it to see whether or not your structure, your current business practices are correct. Oh, I'm Bob Repine, Director of Oregon Housing and Community Services. thank you.
Remembers.
Only because I saw a slip of note. That should be a finable offense. So, Mr. Chairman, what we have done in all of our particularly management positions, administrative positions, as we reevaluate our business plans, I make my managers and administrators, before they just go out and summarily just hire a new position, saying, okay, I want you to do a fundamental analysis of your agent, your section and the work that section does relative to that position, and are there savings to be made or is there adjustments? This is a good time to make business adjustments if practical, because you're going to be bringing somebody else in. If the job description changes because of a fundamental change in how you want to make your deliverables come out, you don't want to hire somebody that's not going to fit that job description anymore. So what I have required and demanded of my administrators is that they go through a very fundamental business practice of reassessing positions at that level and to make sure that the organizational strengths are in line correctly. And so that's why it took a while, but I think good business practices, it could have been after the end of his 8-month result and his Rick's relook of his operations, maybe that position wasn't going to be used in any way. Then it would have made sense that you maybe could have considered having it removed. I think to hire a position for the sake of hiring a position, because it was always a position, is not a good business investment phase environment.
Representative Croft.
Mr. Chairman, that begs a couple of questions. Who does the hiring for you? And let me preface your answer by saying, making this statement. One of the issues that has evolved over the last couple of sessions is the vacancy factors and the reasons they are held vacant. That's why I asked you the question about why you did it. If you can make the argument for the proper business case, it certainly makes me a lot more comfortable. But when it comes to the issue of holding vacant positions, in my mind, more than 3 months, that then leads me to the conclusion as a businessman that unless you fill the work of that position and it doesn't negatively impact you to have it vacant during that time, anything over 3 months from a business perspective means to me that maybe you don't really need the position. Because if the impact is that great, you've got to get it filled at some point to retain your customer service. In your case, because of your issues and having compliance issues with federal paperwork, which is a very serious thing. So who does the hiring? And how long does it take to get people hired? Does DAS do the hirings for you? Do you personally do the hiring for that, those positions?
Mr. Chairman, committee members, I think as in most state agencies, we go through an analysis of the job description. If through Mr. Krager's analysis of that job, if he believed that the tasks and responsibilities of that employees would have changed, he would change then the job description. We would get then that as an approval from DAS to be able to go out and establish what pay scale and what level it would be going out at. We would then advertise, open, depending on the level of the job, the sophistication of the job. We might go local, we might go statewide, we might go national. We conduct all those interviews. We do a pre-screening. We do the PD-100 reviews. We winnow the list down to what we believe are eligibles. We will conduct phone calls, interviews, and then keep working the group down. And as you know, Mr. Representative, is sometimes scheduling for getting 12 candidates to come in takes a little while to do all fairness to each one of them. So it's not just immediate somebody walking in off the street and doing a hiring. But we take care of that. And in many cases where we have direct relationship with partners, where their staff is involved with a component of our programs, external partners, we'll even invite them to sit in on the reviewing panel with us to give us their assessment. Do they think this person has the skill sets that they believe that they would like to have a manager or administrator to have relative to their working relationships? So we go out of the way to make that fit be a right fit the first time and not find out we've bought into something that didn't work at the onset.
Very good. And Mr. Chair, I promise you the last question.
Really quick for those who are listening, Representative Krupp is coming in after phase one and phase two, and so these questions are very appropriate.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the indulgence of also the committee members and the agency. I've been stuck in another committee for some time. This is not my area of expertise, but these questions apply. The money that you reverted to DAS, based on using temporary staffers instead of having fully employed positions, do you get that money back? Does DAS revert that money back to you somehow?
Mr. Chairman, committee members, the answer is yes. It comes back to us as other funds.
General fund is reversed.
General fund is reversed.
Thank you.
I want to follow up and share one thought with the committee. Director Reepin made a statement about partners that work with them. I would share with you quite a few of those partners have contacted me, and it is very rare that you have partners behind closed doors say everything positive. And I want you to know the partners from around the state have spoken very highly of your department. And again, that's behind closed doors. That's anonymous. And it has been positive. So I think that's a pat on the back for you folks.
Mr. Chair, a question for staff. In looking at the other funds, non-limited, I've missed what is the reason for the increase in 0507 over 0305, somewhere in the neighborhood of $450 million.
Mr. Chair, Representative Krupp, the other funds non-limited is reflective of all of their bonding activity. So in the last few years, they have experienced increasing levels of refinancing of bonds in issuance of additional debt. So all of that is going to funnel through that line item there. Perhaps the agency wants to speak in greater depth of the level of refinance that's been happening, but they've experienced a significant increase.
Okay, so Mr. Chair, this is refinancing of previously incurred debt?
Yes, Mr. Chair and Representative Krupp. In some cases, not all of this, the $2.2 million that you see here is inclusive of all of their bonding at
billion, you mean.
Sorry, yes. Billion with a B, not an M. It is all of their bonding programs, not just the refinancing, but a lot of that increase that you're seeing is because of the refinancing volume that they have experienced.
And again, Mr. Chair, please, and Monica, these are bonds that are let by the state of Oregon, and is general fund or federal funds that pays the debt servicing.
Mr. Chair and Representative Krupp, and I'll give the agency a chance to do that too. They have several different bonding programs. They have an elderly and disabled bonding program, which is a general obligation bond. However, repayment of that debt is serviced by those that the loans were made to. So the repayment of the loans services the debt, but it is backed by a general obligation of the state. So should those default at a significant level, the general fund would be subject to having to pay those. That's only one portion. The bulk of it is going to be in your single-family and multifamily programs that they have. And again, those are state revenue bonds. They do not have the full faith and credit of the state. But they are serviced again by the loan repayments to those that we lend to.
Okay, now I want to interject here just to make sure I'm correct. In addition to the state being the backers, that's one component, but in addition, each and every one of these loans has a credit analysis that's completed on it along with an appraisal, and I'm assuming that should loans out in the community default, there's full collateral to back up those credits. And so in order for the state to truly be on the hook, if you will, using that term, not only would the loans have to go bad, but the collateral would have to be insufficient to cover those loans. And I'm assuming there's also a equity position, some type of equity position that are made on credits. I'm assuming we're not doing 100% financing. What's that?
Mortgage insurance on the single family.
Okay.
That was Jack Kenny, Deputy Director. Yeah, we get single-family loans, Mr. Chairman Bob Riefen, Director of Oregon Housing. We have FHA underwriting standards, so there's insurance opportunities, so we don't take really our exposure vis-a-vis the state, if you want to look at the bottom line. On single-family, it's very, very small because of the way we structure our loans. Again, multifamily, it's a combination of a very intense physical analysis of the financial feasibility of the project, making sure that, and different than private sector possibly, we require a series of strong set-asides of resources for long-term reinvestments, short-term turnovers, that is money that's held in abeyance to make sure that there's financial solvency to make sure.
You maintain loan loss reserves as well, I'm assuming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we have, the state backstopped about three times before it ever would get to default to the state.
Mr. Chair, you just brought up a great point, loan loss reserves. How much is that? Is it's actual cash in the bank that's earning money, earning interest? Who gets the interest? Where does it go?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Krupp, in terms of, I assume, just to kind of rephrase the question, specific dollars that the department has related to potential defaults, is that right? The bond indentures for all of our programs have a variety of different requirements. Some of those require us to hold, like, for example, in our mortgage revenue bond, 102% asset to liability test. So we're required to have these dollars set aside. To answer your question specifically, where the dollars reside, they do sit in. We invest the dollars ourselves. We invest in a variety of agencies, government or U.S. treasuries, and through our trustees, primarily sitting at the bank that we have chosen. So in this case, for you, in the case of the mortgage revenue bond program, it would be U.S. Bank.
Assuming there's covenants on those reserves, it's not the Bob Repine
right. It's third-party control with oversight from the Treasurer's Office.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, also, because the representative is relatively new to this discussion with housing, we are, I'm going to just give you a quick primer on housing. We are, for all practical purposes, a business in the, working in the disguise of government in the state of Oregon. We are an asset-built agency that survives off of its business investments. So staffing for the agency, if you notice, general fund-wise, we are very small in general fund, in which very small amount of that goes to positions. The staff that we have that performs the task on behalf of our single-family, multifamily, adult family programs, all those are paid through the same kind of investments that you hear that are recycling. So that actually is in many ways how we function within the state of Oregon to make these loans available. We pay as we go from our investment sites.
Sure. So the banks actually do the investment for you. The oversight is with the Department of Treasury. Does Treasury charge you a management fee for oversight?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Croft, I guess just to clarify, in terms of the invest, if we're talking about investment activity, the department is essentially responsible for doing, we at the department do all of our investing. The trustee is the middle person. They do all of the transfers between the brokers and the banks. So they are the holder. So in terms of oversight, though, the state treasury does provide oversight, primarily in our debt management area. They don't charge us a specific fee, and I'm going to look back on investment activity. With the exception of our elderly and disabled bond program, they are responsible on the investment side there. There is a fee that they do charge. But for the revenue bond purposes, we do our own investing, and there is oversight done from the debt management standpoint by state treasury.
When I first started looking at this department, the acid test for me was the general fund versus the income that's earned. And, you know, the fact is we will know there's an issue in this department in terms of true cash management when they have to come to us to ask for cash to maintain their operations. Because right now, and correct me if I'm wrong, in order for you to service your debt and to service your employees, these loans have to be working and revolving, generating income, and that's how you're paying to keep the doors open. That's a fair assessment.
Yes, and Mr. Chairman, to add to that, and I think to Monica's recommendation related to our housing finance fund, that is one of the primary reasons that we've had to make a reduction to our other funds is because business hasn't been what it has been in the past over the last 2 years. We have sustained a great deal of prepayments, and as the chair addressed, if you're not creating those assets to generate those dollars, then you have to make reductions. So that's the reason the department has had to look at that direction.
Chair, I want to clarify that again that the money that you do invest through banks, the interest earnings on that stay in those accounts, or do you utilize that for administrative costs or whatever?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Croft, yes and yes. The interest does remain in those accounts. It does earn. We go through every year a comprehensive cash flow analysis of all of our programs, depending on, you know, how much profit has come into the organization, to determine how much money we can take out of our bond indentures for administrative cost. And again, because we've seen such a reduction in our assets with the high prepayments and the low interest earnings that we have seen over the last few years, we've had to make some reductions.
Let me ask a question on this. Have you... then we're going to move on. I got the look. have you folks done an analysis to look at your loan programs based upon the rate of interest you're borrowing at versus what you're able to lend at, mm-hmm. and then determine whether or not your activity is in line with, well, again, we're government, we're not government. I'm sorry, we're not for business. I was going to say where we get the biggest income stream to the department. Do you understand the question?
May I?
Yeah.
Now stepping in.
I run a program very separate from this. It's a federal program. We borrow at 1%. We lend at 8%. We capture 7%.
Right.
I'm curious if you folks have done that analysis.
Jack Kenny, Deputy Director, Oregon Housing and Community Services. And again, for the new member of the committee, we do have a limit on the amount of profitability we can keep. So if we earn over 1.125% or 1.5%, as you recall, that is arbitrage, has to be rebated to the federal government. So there is a ceiling on our income.
There's
no limits. So, and to your question, we have done analysis, maybe not to the level that you were talking about. I think at some point you could say that if we simply focus maybe on first-time homebuyer program, perhaps that would have a lower administrative cost and a higher profitability. But as you said, we are government. We have a mission to serve the very low income. So we do make that analysis, and the Housing Council, as our policy oversight body, participates in those discussions.
I'm going to move on here. I apologize. You're right. We are government.
So we are government.
Unless there's a real, real pertinent question, I'm going to turn to Monica and have...
I can sing, too. Talk on the radio, but I can sing.
Was that your best example?
I'm moving us forward.
I wouldn't say it's my best example.
If so, I want to put it to a vote.
Let's move forward. All right.
No nuclear option here.
All right.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I think we had covered all of ELIPO's recommendations for 2005-07, okay. So I guess I would return then and refer you to your packet. There are two letters in here requesting supplemental expenditure limitation for the 0305 biennium, the biennium we're in now. Those are summarized for you in the memo. The first is 30,000 additional lottery funds expenditure limitation to cover debt service. This appears to be a simple mathematical error in establishing their expenditure limitation. They did receive the lottery allocation in cash. The debt service payment has been made, so we're not in default there. This is simply an accounting issue we need to get cleared up. So ELIPO is recommending approval of that additional $30,000 in lottery funds. The second request is for an additional $6.5 million in federal funds. The department has received higher than projected allocations from three of their federal programs. We have them talk about that a little bit if they'd like. But essentially, most of the dollars are going out to programs that they're intended for. A smaller portion is being retained by the agency to cover administrative costs. What you're going to see in their budget then in 0305 is that they have unscheduled other fund limitation and are using the federal dollars in lieu of other funds. Very much similar to the package 104 that you see for the 0507 proposal.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Krupp.
Monica, how much, what percentage of the 6.5 is the agency retaining for administrative costs?
Mr. Chair and Representative Krupp, I believe I estimated that at about 12%, about 805,000 of the...
Clarification, please, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Krupp, I think in terms of this particular allocation, Monica computed as probably 12%, but if you look at the entire, because this is just an increase, basically, again, to speak to one of our packages that you didn't have the luxury to hear, we have made some shifts from our other funds because of what we were just talking about to our federal funds to offset some of our costs, because in the past we've had the ability to pass all of our dollars through to communities and not have to, because again we were able to pay for our own. This particular, it may equate to 12%, but the allowable cost related to the CSBG is 5%, and the low-income energy assistance program is 2.5%.
Of which we're eligible for 10.
So the department takes a relatively small portion of federal funds. Again, because of the math and because of the adjustment that is necessary to correlate with the 0507, I can see where Monica's math would come out to be 12%. But that's not the true administrative cost off of the federal grants.
And, Mr. Chair, that was my understanding. The question I guess I thought I was answering was, of the increase, how much are they retaining in those dollars, and it is the $805,000 that they're using for personnel and service and supplies rather than the special payments that are going out. But again, in the 0507 recommendation that you're seeing, the agency is making this administrative shift program-wide on all of their federal programs to start charging admin dollars to feds and lowering their other funds expenditures by like amounts.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. And so LFO is recommending approval of that request for the $6.5 million.
Performance measures.
So that leaves us with performance measures in the back of your packets. There was quite a bit of discussion, I think, during the joint subcommittee. The agency had even provided a packet of material about what they're doing on performance measures in trying to collect data from the action agencies that they work with as well. At least two of you will probably recall the discussion they had around their OPA system, the data collection and case management, and how they'll be able to gather additional data in the future about the end result people serve with many of the community service assistance programs. So some of those are reflected in here, and where they will be able to have better data in the future as we move forward. Overall, the housing and program delivery measures did not hear a lot of discomfort among members on the joint committee of those measures and what they're tracking and whether that's reflecting how they're doing. Two measures, suggestions here. One, for the agency to develop measures related specifically to the hunger and food programs. I believe they probably have them internally, but actually start developing them, reporting them to the legislature. And so we're recommending that they do that and report into the Joint Legislative Audit Committee before August 2006 on what measure that they're going to start bringing forward.
Did that come from the – where did that one come from?
I believe the vice chair of the Senate, Senator Carter at the time, was interested in coming up with this measure.
Okay.
And the final recommendation is simply to modify performance measures 1 through 5 and number 7 to then list the actual numbers of individuals served or units developed in addition to the percentage that's being represented here. So just to provide some additional outcome data to give you a base for comparison. The other thing that's been added in all agencies is the customer service satisfaction survey that will be done by Department of Administrative Services. So that is in here as well.
I remember Senator Johnson and Senator Morris had, was it a budget note or a performance measure referring to having the it was
their best business practice.
Best business practice. Thank you.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I believe there are still conversations going on around best practices and who's going to receive that responsibility. It's my understanding that budget note will likely be in the Department of Administrative Services and in Legislative Fiscal Offices. Budget, and we will be working with all agencies in trying to incorporate, similar to what you're seeing with the customer satisfaction, you know, is there something that we want to put in all or in many of the agencies that would be relevant? So that still is out there and active, just not going to be in here yet.
I thought that was a good idea, Representative Vavakin, what those two senators came up with, and I would hope that we would include that in this.
As long as it's incorporated in one manner or another, I'm comfortable.
Okay.
With what was just described as opposed to us moving to include it as a performance measure, but
you're okay with that?
Whatever.
Okay.
Your pleasure is, Mr. Chair.
Nope. I just want to make sure we try and encapsulate previous conversations as well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do you folks have any comment on the performance measures?
Look forward to
performing. All righty. So with that,
you ready for a motion?
We are. Before we do that, though, colleagues, in the interest of good government, I want to declare that I do have a conflict of interest. A company that I have a significant financial interest in has in the past and in the future may work with communities and businesses that have done business with Housing and Community Services Department. And while I've never contracted with the department directly, and I don't intend to contract with the department directly, I do work with entities that have and may in the future. If anyone wants to receive this statement in writing, they can go to my webpage, my legislative webpage, where I put a statement of financial interest right online for the citizens of the state of Oregon, D.C. So with that.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I admire that, but I would ask you to clarify if you have a conflict or a potential conflict. I would encourage you to consider the words potential.
Well, let's say potential then. Thank you.
Thank
I appreciate that. I just wanted
for the record, we should clarify that you have a potential.
Potential. Thank you very much.
Conflict of interest.
Just trying to be straightforward to the citizens of the state of Oregon. So, with that.
Mr. Chair, I would move relative to House Bill 5122 that the committee, the following, that the committee adopt LFO's recommended budget as described, that the committee adopt the 2003-05 supplemental expenditure limitations, including the $30,000 of lottery funds and $6.5 million of federal funds, that the committee approve the Dash 1 amendments, and as well the performance measures, including the two additions that the agency developed performance measures relating to hunger and food programs, and that those measures be approved by the Joint Legislative Audit Committee by August 1st of 2006, and that the agency modify performance measures 1 through 5 and 7 as described. And then further, that we move House Bill 5122 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Avakian moves the LFO recommended budget along with the supplemental expenditure reports, the Dash 1 amendments, the performance measures, including the new and modified performance measures, and moves that this at House Bill 5122 be recommended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Is that a fair encapsulation?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Any conversation? Any dissension? Seeing none. So passed. With that, colleagues, we are going to close the work session on House Bill 5122, and tomorrow we should be prepared for the Employment Department.
And the Bureau of Labor and Industries.
And the Bureau of Labor and Industries. Thank you very much, and we appreciate the good work you folks do.
Thank you.
With that, colleagues, we are going to close.